Good morning, David.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm a bit depressed by the weather, but never mind.
Oh, aren't we all? Now, is the Chris Gayle incident an isolated incident in cricket, or is it something that we see a lot with sports people?
Well, I think what it sort of happened is that we've seen what I understand to be fairly common occurrence, but it happened live on television.
Mm.
So, to some degree, you could say he's kind of done us a favour in that he's actually stupidly behaved in front of all our eyes in a way that, according to various female sports journalists, he and indeed some other sportsmen have behaved to them behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well- It's unusual to be as open and available for us to see, but it's not an unusual occurrence.
What kind of difficulties do women trying to make their way in the sporting world actually face?
Well, it's pretty tough because although we are in the 21st century, sport still. A bastion of masculinity. You could argue that certainly parts of sport are the last bastions of unreconstructed masculinity. It's where men claim to rule the roost, where they claim to be, you know, superior in all respects in terms of knowledge, performance, etc. So it is hard to break into that world, and it's particularly hard because the continuing emphasis on a woman's sexual appearance and her sexual attractiveness, a sense that she's an intruder in this sphere that's really a male sphere, especially when she's covering male sport. So it is difficult. I don't want to deter anyone from doing it, and clearly, you know, many of the female sports journalists who've spoken out say how they love their work. But they also have to deal with this kind of issue on a daily basis.
So what kind of measures then are in place to punish players that overstep the line?
Well, I mean, there are protocols and rules. And as we've seen in the case of Chris Gayle, I mean, he's been fined. He's been fined $10,000. I mean, he's a multimillionaire. So, I mean, that's probably not too painful for him. I mean, the kinds of controls range from, suspension and sacking to fines, warnings. I mean, there are all kinds of ways in which that kind of behaviour is controlled.
Mm.
These are both formal and informal. So there's the formal process, and in some cases, of course, it could be legal. I mean, it could be prosecution for sexual harassment or even sexual assault.
No.
I'm not saying that was the case.
No.
The Chris Gayle case, but I mean, across the field, there are a number of ways of dealing with the issue, but also. Other players, coaches, managers, etc., behind the scenes saying what shouldn't happen.
Now, as you were saying at the start there, Chris Gayle's been fined $10,000, but he is a multi-millionaire. Is there a bit of a disconnect with these financial punishments or other punishments for players? Are they really a punishment?
Well, I mean, there are different types of punishment, and I say when it's difficult to hurt a very affluent person with a fine. You would hope that there'd be an element of shame involved here, even some humiliation or repentance. But what is perfectly clear, I think, in the case of Chris Gayle is that he isn't sorry. He delivered a forced non-apology, either familiar non-apology, which I wrote about in the conversation piece that we're discussing today, which is essentially, if you were offended, then I'm sorry. I mean, that's not an apology, because it's actually not an apologising for what he actually said and did. It's apologising for the response that it elicited, which makes the person who's responding responsible for what happened. And I think that is a problem. I mean, you could suspend him, you could sack him, you could send him home, you could do those kinds of things. That's fairly strong. People might think that's the appropriate action. What you would hope, though, is that he would actually have some period of self-reflection. But I think it seems to be perfectly clear that he and his supporters think he's done nothing wrong. It was harmless. It was a bit of fun, a bit of play, a bit of entertainment. They just don't get it. And it's very hard to kind of, break through under those circumstances when someone really doesn't get it.
With the idea that people just aren't getting it, we are seeing a lot more advertising for women's cricket, as well as an increase in the female sports reporters. Would this help people change their view about women in sport and help them get it, so to speak?
I think quite clearly. And what has infuriated the people with involved in the Big Bash League here, the event in which he offended, in the men's side, is that the women's side is going very well.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some very good stories. They're playing for the men. They're getting good, some very good crowds. People coming early to watch. They're getting good TV audiences.
Mm-hmm.
There was a good story to tell, and that is what has been particularly unfortunate about this case. Now, I think that the key thing, the key development, is to end this situation where women are intruders, strangers, in the world of sport at all levels. I mean, that goes from participation to management and coaching and ownership across the board, women getting involved in sport. Obviously, it's very heavily loaded at the moment towards men in most cases. But that's historical. There's an historical dominance there. A lot of has been invested in men's sport over the years to get it to the position that it's in now. And as we've seen with sports such as cricket and association football, otherwise known as soccer, that there is some real progress being made here with players, for example, getting some kind of professional salary to enable them to keep performing as elite athletes without having to get second jobs and that kind of thing. Now, the men haven't had to worry about that for many years. Women get far less than the men. They're much less saleable propositions, one might say, at the moment. But you can see that the indicators are going in the right, are going in the right direction, and therefore that women are making progress within sport. But it is very hard because there is dyed-in-the-wool resistance from what essentially let's call them out. They're chauvinists. They're male chauvinists in sport, and they find in sport in many cases a refuge.
Yeah, definitely. We will unfortunately have to leave it there, but as you said, it is quite relieving, especially as a woman myself, to see that women in sport are slowly getting the audience and the support that they need to be able to do well professionally and bring this equality into the sporting world.
Well, yes, indeed. And even if you're a sports marketer, there's a perfect logic there. There's a perfect economic logic. Let's forget politics and equality and those kinds of questions. I don't want to forget them. But just on pure marketing logic, why would you alienate half of your audience? Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. And so the more women find their place within this very important cultural institution of sport,
And that is a big argument for a lot of other equality arguments. Why would you alienate half of your audience? So, I'm looking forward to seeing women's sports more often on the big screen, so to speak. But thank you very much for your time today, David.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
That's all right. Have a good day.
Thank you.